Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/truetransparencypricing. Happy you'll be if the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Blake Bedingfield in studio with us. He joins us every Tuesday from 11 until noon as we scout the Titans' previous game and look forward to the upcoming matchup on the regular season schedule. You can read his work at paulkoharski.com. Blake, how are you?
Well, now that Edley's Barbecue is serving lunch, I'm even better today.
We planned this during your hour.
This is excellent. On purpose. Yeah. What is, if you're looking at the offense, What is fundamentally broken? Where would you aim to start a fix?
You know, I don't think there's one place you can actually point a finger and say, if you fix the offensive line, you know, that will solve everything. Because there's five pieces to the offensive line, and really there's more than that. I think you go back to the way – you have to go back to how the roster was constructed offensively. And let's go back a few years when DeMarco Murray was the running back. Well, his backup running back was Derrick Henry. So when one came out of the game, a similar version of the starter came into the game, and you've lost very little. Well, you don't have that on offense now. When Derrick Henry comes out of the game, you have a totally different back in a Deion Lewis. That is two different styles of backs, two different threats to the defense. Now, really, there's only one threat to a defense, and that's Derrick Henry. Deion's not the player he was in New England years ago, where he was a dynamic receiver out of the backfield and had some run ability in between the tackles. You see defenses in the first 3 weeks that are trying to take away Derrick Henry in the run game. Especially last week on Thursday night versus Jacksonville, they played man-to-man with the receivers outside. They rushed a passer with four. At times, they brought a fifth, but they really didn't need to. They played the run on the way to the quarterback at times, rushing that passer. When Deion Lewis is in the game, they rush four, and they drop into coverage, which makes it a tighter windows for the quarterback to throw. So you see a little bit different going back to that DeMarco Murray / Derrick Henry running back. And I think that second running back is a big loss for this team. And that starts with the roster construction. But if you want to go, you know, to a little bit further with that, receivers have to get open. They were struggling getting open versus Jalen Ramsey and A.J. Bouye. They were struggling getting off that man-to-man press coverage and getting open. And that's allowed that rush to get to Marcus even quicker. So the offensive line has had their struggles, not as much communication issues, but just losing one-on-one issues. So there's a number of things coming into play. You know, where you looked in the past where Marcus had success, it was a little bit of the short passing game to Delanie Walker, even Rashard Matthews. You know, you're talking 7-8 yard passes that were ball control, keeping the clock moving, time of possession. They've gone away from that. They're trying to run the ball, and they've had some success. Until the Jacksonville game, they've had a lot of success running the ball, even in the midst of the 8-9 man fronts at times. So there's a lot of things going on offense, but a lot of it starts with the construction of the offense.
Why would they have gone away from the short passing game when it seems like that's what they desperately need against the pass rushes that are having success against them, 17 sacks in three games, and Marcus clearly struggling to see and sort through stuff? Wouldn't the short passing game be the easy fix to get in a rhythm, get something going, get everybody confident?
Especially with your two most consistent, in my opinion, the two most consistent receivers on the team being the short receivers, Delanie Walker and Adam Humphries. That's where I would think the offense would want to go, which is going to stretch those linebackers out a little bit and keep them away from playing the run at times. And, you know, unfortunately, that just hasn't happened. They've had success going to Delanie. I had moderate success going to Adam Humphries when they've had those chances. But, you know, last week or Thursday night game versus Jacksonville was really the first time that Adam wasn't helping out as a blocker and was really had the opportunity to get out into his routes.
Even when they've tried the short passing game, though, in some cases, you know, Deion Lewis has the drop in week one on a screen. We saw the drop from Henry this past week. Mariota overthrew Humphries by 5 feet over his head on a short pass attempt. So they're not even connecting on those layup passes, other than that long, and it counts, the 75-yard touchdown that Henry had in Cleveland.
you're seeing a lot of breakdowns, and it's not just one person. And just like you mentioned, you know, it's either a drop from the running back, drop from a receiver.
Nothing's easy.
Quarterback overthrowing really numerous players. But you're also seeing something different in the – or I'm seeing something different in the quarterback. The first few years, Marcus was a – if he stood in the pocket, he would take the hit, deliver the throw downfield, you know, and that's just kind of the way he was. I don't know if that's been coached out of him now. He's starting to see the rush a little bit more, especially in the Jacksonville game. I know they had 9 sacks and 13 other pressures and hurries, but, you know, he's looking at the rush now, and he's seeing that it's coming down at him quick. And, you know, I think that's obstructing his view to the receivers that could be open.
Expand on that. Why are we seeing him regress? Why does it feel like the play at quarterback is getting worse, not better, in year 5?
You know, we can go through all the different offenses and talk about the scheme changes, but probably more importantly is, what is he being taught? You know, what is he being taught? Is he taught to get rid of the ball quickly? Is he taught to be a one read, make sure the hot read's open? If the hot read's not open, go to your second. You know, Marcus has been a progression read quarterback in the past. He did that even in college, where he had a lot of 4 and 5 receivers out in the pass patterns. You know, he was very quick, a lot of pre-snap reads at Oregon, but he was very quick to deliver the ball and make that second and third read. So, you know, I think it's a lot of changes, but it's also a lot of coaches that have told him what to do. I'm not in the building. I can't tell you what they've taught him the last couple of years, whether it's to get rid of the ball. You have a defensive-minded head coach. This is a lot to what Jeff Fisher did back in the day, where, you know, it was run the ball, time of possession, try not to create turnovers and put your defense in a bad spot, and we're going to win the game with a strong defense. I would think with a head coach and this defense, you're really coaching the same way.
I'm trying to pinpoint, because you got Arthur Smith. There is continuity there. He's been on staff for a while, and the thought is it's not going to change a ton. There's familiarity with Marcus and what he does well and how the offense should be executed. Do you change how you teach a player or what you want to see from them based on injury history? I'm trying to pinpoint a reason as to why that would change. With Mariota, have you ever seen in coaching and player development where you may protect a player at times by teaching them to do something different to avoid injury?
You know, even when Steve McNair was having his injuries, you wanted him on the field. And, you know, I remember even his MVP year, it was one of those situations where Coach Heimerdinger was kind of hammering him of, just get rid of the ball on first down. If you're going to take a hit, get rid of the ball. Let's play second and third. You're good enough to make those throws, make those completions. So, yes, there is a little bit of that that's taught. But those natural athletes like a Steve McNair, like a Marcus, you know, they have a hard time not holding the ball and taking that extra avoid in the pocket of being able to escape a rush and deliver the ball downfield. You see it a lot, especially with the athletic quarterbacks in the NFL now, whether it's Deshaun Watson, Russell Wilson. They're all trying to create plays, and they're all taking extra hits as well.
We're on this this kind of debate, circular debate. The let it rip, Marcus, maybe being held back by the idea of the one good thing he's doing right now is not turning the ball over. And the let it rip idea comes with interception risk. Based on what you're seeing, where do you think he stands on that? I feel like he sees the negative side of a 50-50 ball. Hey, if I throw that up there, might wind up in the other guy's hands.
You know, I think it's what's being taught to him, and I'm not in that building again, but you see a heavy run offense first with Derrick Henry. Try not to turn the ball over. Let's create first downs, long drives. Time of possession, let's play defense. You have the defense to win. You see that. But the let it rip, Marcus, he's had those games before where he's let it rip. Even last year he's had those games.
Yes.
Does he have the personnel to consistently do that? And I mean the receivers to get open when you need them. And I mean versus a Jalen Ramsey and an A.J. Bouye. If you're a receiver and you're going to let it rip, you have to be able to get open versus that press coverage versus good corners. You're going to have that again this week. You know, Trufant's a really good corner, and they're going to have those opportunities every week to try to get open. And if they can't consistently do that, then that's a struggle. You're going to have to go back to that short passing game, which is Delaney and Adam, and then the run game with Derrick Henry.
Is it zone or man that gives him the most trouble? Or I say him, they, the passing game, the most
trouble? You know, I would have said zone up until this past week, but – you know, this week when they got in the face and pressed them from the line of scrimmage and ran with them down the field, they struggle to get down the field and they struggle to get off that coverage.
Okay, I asked that because whenever I automatically am thinking about Corey Davis when you gave that answer. Maybe I shouldn't be, but that's my assumption. And if that's I'm going back to last year in the games where he quote unquote let it rip. It was against, let's see, Philadelphia and New England comes to mind. Those are two teams where he
made
was
a hell of a throw against Dallas.
Against Dallas, but he's beating the guy in front of him, Stephon Gilmore. They went after him all game long. You have to give Davis the opportunity to prove that he can't win the 50-50 battle, don't you?
I think you do, but I'm not. This is year three. He either can or can't do it, and I'm talking about Davis.
I know, yeah.
And when you play him against man, he's usually a much more instinctive and confident receiver. He knows how to work his body against man. He knows the right depth to get in his routes, and he can use his strength to get off. You know, especially on those deep dig routes, you know, we talk about. But in zone, he's a little bit mechanical. Even on that pass that was questionable whether it was zone or man, and Marcus thought it was man coverage. Yeah. It was really zone, and the defenders had laid off. And Corey Davis throttled down to get into a spot, which was correct. But he was very mechanical doing it, not getting his head around fast. Still a poor throw by the quarterback. He thought it was man coverage, and it wasn't. You know, those are little things that the receivers taught, but he's got to get that mechanical, that robotic way of running routes out of him, especially in zone coverage, because he's much more instinctive and much more confident of a receiver when he's playing against man. And you see that against A.J. Brown as well. You know, A.J. Brown's a much better, right now, man receiver because he uses his physicality against the defensive back.
So am I wrong to – I'm still on the side, Blake, with Corey Davis in year three. Still sitting here saying, give him the football. Like, put the ball in the air and treat him like a number five overall pick. And I'm not saying you have to throw it 20 times a game his way. He doesn't need 20 targets, but he needs more than four.
I think we have to get the number five pick overall kind of out of everybody's head. You know, he's just not that player. He's a good, solid receiver in the league, but he's not an upper echelon receiver. He's
but
just
they
not.
Thought he was that player. Well, they wouldn't have drafted him fifth overall, right?
There was people that thought that. Yes, there's no question about it.
It's just weird to me because I feel like by making that pick, they're saying he's a number one receiver and he's the fifth overall pick. So give him the opportunity to prove it or not. And I guess you're saying that he really has proven that he's not that.
I think so far in year two and a half, I think he's proven that he's not that guy. He's a solid number two receiver that can get open at times, can be a difference maker at times, but not on a consistent game-in-game basis where you're going to sit there and go, he's going to have 7-8 catches in the game. He's going to be a 100-yard receiver. He's just not. He hasn't proven that to that point. I think track record is a great indicator of what future success is, and he hasn't shown that in the last 2.5 years, and I don't see that on the horizon as well. I think you'll see flashes of it. I think you'll have games where that happens. I just don't think it's going to be every game.
Blake, what do you think Nate Davis can do right now? It sounds like it could be a starting gig
it's
for
time.
Him this weekend.
You know, I think based on last week's play, and we're talking about both games.
The Nate Davis era has arrived.
Jahmyr Douglas, I mean, you have to have something new. You cannot throw Jahmyr Douglas out with a film that he's put on tape and try to go into this game and say he's going to get better. He's just not. So, you know, Nate Davis has to be that next option, especially if Pamphil is still hurt. So, you know, it's tough. It's tough for a rookie third-round draft choices. Now, going through the draft choices, when you're a first-rounder, you're an expected starter from day one. A second-rounder is an eventual starter, and a third-rounder is a starter at some point in his first 2 years, okay? A fourth-rounder is usually a two-deep player. That's kind of how when you draft a player. So having Nate Davis start in his first year in week four of the season is a little bit early. Not just where he's drafted. Now, they could have had a higher grade on him, which changes things. But you're talking about a small school kid, okay, that didn't get to play in preseason. Don't worry about the small school as much. I worry about the lack of playing time with the first group. You can get it in practice. That's fine. He can go against Jarrell Casey and Daquan Jones and starters. But to not have those preseason games where he can work out the kinks is going to be the biggest issue. I worry about blown assignments at times. If you don't think Atlanta Falcons aren't going to come into this game and try to run games on him on the inside where he's late to pass on a twist and stunt, bringing a middle linebacker when they rush outside of him, you know, those are things that I worry about in those quick sacks to Marcus is what could be the result of having a new player, especially a rookie new player, in the fold.
How bad was Douglas prior to Thursday night's game?
You know, I thought all preseason he was just he was a borderline make it player. And then he comes into the game. He's always had good size and some athletic traits, but he's never been able to put it together, even going back to college. And he's been cut a few times in the NFL, and it's because of that lack of consistency. But, you know, in that game, it was a little bit of an avalanche that just continued to build up. And Calais Campbell had his way, whether he was working him inside or outside or really powering him. It was a pretty easy game for Calais Campbell, but he didn't get a lot of help either. And I expected that after, you know, maybe sack four or five. You know, at some point you have to either slant his way and have the center help him, or have a running back step up into that gap and help him on one side or the other. But there was very little help, which, you know, just opened things up for him.
How much will LaJuan's return after this week help the overall line? Or is it just the left tackle position that he'll bring back and secure?
You know, I think he brings an energy and a nastiness he brings a better player to that group, obviously, from an athletic standpoint, but just overall better player. The comfort level of the other four will be better, okay? You're definitely not going to have to help out Taylor on his side. No more chipping, no more bringing somebody over. Now you can help out Conklin. Now you can help out the right guard. You could disperse that that extra man protection.
You can use the original plan that
people.
You had.
No question. So I think he helps out the entire line. He's just not going to be able to make up for those one-on-one misses like Douglas had in the game.
Those are one-on-one nothing. Misses. This isn't like collective.
Right. Those are one-on-one just getting beat down, really is what it was. And but Taylor's going to be able to control his side, and that's going to be a big plus for them.
What you're seeing from Roger Saffold, is this what you've always seen from Roger Saffold?
You know, I think it's a little bit more, you know, he's having to hold blocks a little bit longer, especially in the play action. You know, those play action games, those are 3.5-4 second long pass protection, and he's just not holding up for that long.
And that goes to the answer he gave you, Paul, about coverage sacks and that, yeah, that type of thing.
You know, but any play action game is going to take, you know, 2.5-4 seconds. So it just depends on the length of it. Is it a stretch play action? Is it right behind center? It just depends on the play. But, you know, you're looking at, you have to hold your blocks longer. And the play action is supposed to keep that rush, you know, at bay, but it's not. Teams right now are rushing, especially Jacksonville, are rushing the quarterback, and they're going to play the run on the way to the quarterback. That's just what they're doing. And then the linebackers are cleaning up because the offensive line cannot get downfield on the second level right now. And the linebackers are running free, so they're able to clean up on the second level if there is a handoff and a run. And they're more willing to give up that 6-yard run on the way to the quarterback and a potential big loss. So that's what's happening right now, and you're going to see that in Atlanta as well.
And it's being magnified right now, Saffold's play, because Douglas is one issue, but now they're going to put a rookie in. You know, they should, with Nate Davis at right guard if Pomfield's not available. So you expect some learning curve moments there, welcome to the NFL type moments for the rookie. You've got to have the veteran that you sign secure and playing up to the capabilities that we've seen from the past years of Roger Saffold at guard.
What you would want on paper is Taylor to be able to handle his business on the left tackle side.
Yeah.
A veteran, you know, big time money contract left guard, be able to handle his business. Ben Jones being able to kind of peak more toward the right guard, the rookie, and Conklin, a, you know, top 10 pick, be able to handle his business. The problem is that's not happening. You know, Taylor's going to be able to, I don't doubt, be able to protect his side. But Saffold still got his issues. I even saw in the Jacksonville game, and this was midway through the game, where he was having trouble reaching on an outside run to his side, to the left side. Tavern Bryan, the defensive tackle, you know, just shocked and shed him and made the tackle down the line. Saffold's been really good in the run game until this Jacksonville game, where some of the stronger, quicker guys got to him a little bit and got on his edge and gave him some problems. But, you know, Ben Jones is going to have to give a little bit more attention. You're just going to have to trust the left guard and the left tackle. That's what they're there for. They're veteran players.
How is Atlanta up front?
You know, they're fast. They're not big. They're built a little bit more like the Colts were than Jacksonville. They don't have, you know, Grady Jarrett is going to be the one player that could be a problem for Nate Davis. I don't expect them to put Grady on top of Saffold as much. They don't have the big run stuffers on the inside that Jacksonville has. They don't have that power rush game. They're going to be moving and slanting and pinching. They're going to be moving on that line like the Colts, like the Denico Autrys. You have Vic Beasley. You know, McKinley, the other defensive end, went out injured, so I'm not sure what his health situation is. Adrian Claiborne's a little bit more of a bigger rusher, but he's a defensive end. He's really a base end that has some rush ability, going to win more with power than speed. Vic Beasley does have that speed on the edge. And Grady Jarrett's a tough matchup. Grady Jarrett is a Jarrell Casey-type player. He's great balance, body control, hand use, which can give a young guard a hard time.
Which is the matchup.
Which is going to be the matchup for Nate Davis, which would be Grady Jarrett.
Fair to say that collectively up front, they're better as a group than any one individual that you could pinpoint?
No question. I don't think there's one player that stands out on that group. You know, Jarrett probably being the one that's as most consistent game in, game out. Beasley has flashes, but he's not a consistent pass rusher. McKinley's really the exact same thing. Both former first-round picks that just really haven't evolved their games to be dominant pass rusher types.
We are befuddled that Mike Vrabel is still saying that there will be a place for
Adoree
Jackson in the punt return game. Why? And what's the never-ending appeal of this guy? I mean, I understand if he broke one every once in a while to offset the hidden yardage that he gives up and then the fumble here that really set the ball rolling in Jacksonville. But he's not translated the USC stuff here.
You know, he hasn't. And I was there when we drafted Adoree and coming out of USC. And, you know, he was a dynamic returner. Space was his friend. He was a guy that when he got in space, he was really something with the ball in his hands, had the run vision. You saw him have that ability. Right now, he looks like he's kind of running with a seatbelt on. He's a little hemmed up. He's not really just letting it go as a returner. You saw it a couple games ago where he had some nice returns, but that's not the same dynamic player that he was at USC. This is a guy that returned 8 total kicks for touchdowns in his career at USC. I believe 4 kicks, 4 punts over his career. That's a lot of numbers. And you don't do that by happen chance. That guy's got some skill for it. So I think they still see that. They see the speed. They see the ability. It just hasn't translated, unfortunately, in the last 2.5 years on the field as that punt returner. You know, the fumble was inexcusable, and just letting the ball drop and not catching it is another one. But, you know, it seems like his trajectory is going in the wrong direction, and you want to see someone that can be a little bit more secure, especially when you're a defensive-oriented team. And I think that inability to catch the ball and potential fumble, you got to make that change right now. But do they really want Adam Humphries running? You know, he should be a more pivotal part of the offense, and you know, do you want to subject him to those extra hits?
Well, and what I guess that's sort of the question: what do they have in Adam Humphries? What has he shown as a punt returner? Because you're also asking Adoree Jackson at the end of playing corner to go right back there, and maybe that's part of it also is the reps with that. But what do they have in Adam Humphries?
You know, I think you have a secure catcher. You know, someone that's going to step up and catch the ball and not let it bounce in a negative direction. You have someone that's smart enough to do that. He's going to be a 6 to a 10 yard return guy. That's really what he is. He does have good run vision after he catches the ball, but you know, he's an initial quick guy with some speed, but his speed levels off pretty quick. So, you know, you're not talking about a home run hitter, but you're talking more, if you can get that 6, really 8 to 10 yards of return, that's a first down that you don't really have to get on offense. That's what you want out of a punt returner. If you can average that 10 yard, I think that 10 yard average on punt returns is vital to an offense. It really struggles consistently moving the ball and creating first downs.
I answer this all the time about nobody in your face is a kickoff returner, yada, yada. Can you give the quick, definitive answer on why it's not just Darius Jennings and how kick returning and punt returning are two very different things?
Oh, no question. You know, on punt returning, you have two gunners, whether it's a single release or a press release on the outside. You know, you have guys that are going to be at your catch point on every punt. A kickoff return is a little bit different, especially with the way things are set up now. You have that 15 to 20 yard cushion before that first defender is going to hit you and before you're going to see it. Kickoff returners are a little bit more straight line speed guys, where punt returners have a little bit more of that lateral mobility quickness to avoid that initial gunner or defender on the punt.
Bookmark that, everyone, and stop asking.
To me, it's a no-brainer to put Adam Humphries back there now.
Just be safe. Start safe. I mean, for this team that plays it safe in so many ways, that's the other thing.
Blake's
they play
right
it safe
the,
in so many ways, and here they live risky.
Trying to average 10 yards on the return, I'm looking at it trying to save 10 yards on the return.
Well,
So if you get catch, the 10, it's 20.
That's what I'm saying. I'm looking at it as 20 to 30 yards difference when you consider the
don't
lost yardage with the Jackson. Yeah.
The hidden yardage there is huge.
You know, we went years ago, we had the Pac-Man Jones who had a lot of the Doherty traits, you know, the ability to you know, fumble the ball or the ability to return one for a touchdown, okay? And then we went to the Mark Mariani.
But you got the touchdowns once in a while from Pac-Man.
And Mark Mariani was a great 10-yard returner. And he was always putting the offense in a position to not have to get one more first down on offense. That 10 yards is huge. And Mark every now and then would break one. And I think Mark's best trait, going back to Mariani, was really the ability in big-time situations to give you a 40-yard kickoff return close to the end of the game to make that two-minute drive a little bit less. Those are great traits for a returner, not necessarily hitting the home run every time.
What have you seen from Harold Landry?
I see a guy that gives good effort whether he's playing the run or pass. I see a guy that's still one rusher, very little win on the outside in one-on-one situations. They're not doubling him. He's not putting that kind of pressure.
Multiple moves or one move?
I see a one move. I see him try to work the inside. A couple of times, what you've seen is him slant and pinch inside, but that's a natural, what they call on defense. And he can slide inside that tackle and make the run play. He's not afraid to stick his nose in there and get dirty, but, you know, he's just not winning as a pass rusher, and that's his trait. That's what he has to have to be successful in this league. Otherwise, he's just a guy, and right now he's just been a guy. Where you looked at Wake, and I go back to Cameron Wake in that first game, you saw him win one-on-one. I don't care what tackle they put out there, good, bad, indifferent, he beat them. And that's what you have to have as a pass rusher, the ability to win on the outside. You saw it in Josh Allen, first-round pick of the Jaguars. The guy was winning on the outside, whether it's a pressure with a power or outside or inside move, he was winning. And that is what you have to have from Harold Landry, and he hasn't been able to give that in the first year and a half of his tenure in the NFL.
How are they using Cam Wake now compared to week one? We've seen a drop in about 10 snaps per game.
Can't find him on film. Not sure why. You know, this is a guy that when he's in the game could be impactful. He can be impactful not only in the passing game but in the run game. There's very few tackles that can really block him one-on-one. He's a guy that can move inside and out, not understanding what they're saving him for. Take off the bubble wrap and let's play.
Because you've been behind the scenes, do you think, just – assuming here, because we don't know what the conversations are, but assuming the conversations are, well, let's keep him fresh for the majority of our season. Let's monitor the snap count early on. Is that the effort that they're going for here?
You know,
is that the conversation?
I would think that's probably what's going on. But, you know, the thing is that if other players are creating a rush, if other players are getting to the quarterback, then you can do that. If you can't, you got to let it loose and let him play, because he is your best one right now. He is your best one. And he's really the only one getting consistent pressure. He has to play more than 17 snaps or 14 snaps. That's not acceptable.
How about Jarrell Casey?
Jarrell looks, he is getting some double teams, but that's nothing new for Jarrell. He's gotten double teams in the past. The problem is that I don't see the lateral mobility that he had before the injury last year. And Jarrell's always had great balance and quickness off the snap. He can get the edge of the guard or center and win with his hand use and balance and body control. And he's always been a very instinctive runner. He's still getting off the snap correctly. I just don't see that extra burst. And maybe that's going to come as he continues to get reps and work that leg back. But, you know, they had the injury last year. But I don't see the exact same quickness that he had once before. Love him as a player, always have, and I hope I see it. But, you know, he's not going to have the extra rusher inside with him. That's not on the roster. It's not on the roster in Daquan Jones.
For a while, right?
Right.
I mean, hasn't, maybe ever.
Daquan Jones has played very well, but Daquan Jones was drafted as a rundown player, and he still is a rundown player that's asked to rush the passer. And there is not a secondary inside rusher. There wasn't on the team last year, and there's not on the team this year.
Well, yeah.
Well, Jeffrey Simmons is a quicker, more athletic player, but you're talking about a guy who had 2 sacks last year at Mississippi State. Now, does he have the skill set to do that? Yeah, he does. But will he this year? I don't know. That's coming back after 9 months of an ACL. Don't expect the same quickness that you'll see in 2020. He'll be a much better player in 2020.
Someone recently was like, you don't have to treat everyone like they're going to be all pro status. And I'm like, I'm not trying to be. But they're treating Jarrell Casey like he's all pro status. The guy next to him better win some one-on-one matchups. That's all I'm asking.
You got to. But you also have to have the traits to do it. And there really isn't a trait player next to him. You know, you're talking about Isaiah Mack, who's done a really good job as an undrafted free agent out of Chattanooga. I think in the limited snaps he's had, he's been very productive.
There's a reason why he's active.
No question. Brent Urban has just been a guy. You know, I expected him to be more of a player that can provide some height and length. And when you go against certain players, not that Bortles, we're playing Bortles anymore, but, you know, Bortles was a guy that could throw right into the defensive line's arms, and you want taller players for that. Austin Johnson's a rundown player. He's not a pass rusher. He's brought in to be a rundown player, and that's what he is. And there really isn't that. Matt Dickerson hasn't developed the pass rush game that I think they had hoped he would. Or otherwise he'd be getting a lot more snaps as a pass rusher.
Will we see Evans used more in that role? Will we see the defensive effective? Back schemed more to try to get pressure the way that Dean Pease had to do that in the second half of last year?
You know, I think and a lot of it's going to be Wesley Woodard's health because he's going to have to take Evans' spot. But, you know, you want to see Rashawn Evans be more of a pass rusher, whether it's the inside rushing or the outside. He has that. He's still playing with a high energy and aggressive style. And if he can match that with Awake and other players, then they can give them a little bit extra. But, you know, right now, Wesley Woodard has got to be on the field for him to be more on the outside.
We've mentioned the defensive line. The rest of their defense, how would you sum up Falcons' defensive play right now?
You know, I think it's hit or miss. And a lot of that is predicated on what kind of rush they can get and if they can stop a run.
Is it similar to Indianapolis?
I think it is. I think Indianapolis is a little bit better personnel overall, where maybe the Falcons have a little bit better on the corner side. But, you know, losing Keanu Neal at the safety position is going to be a big loss. Keanu Neal's is a dual player, kind of like a Kevin Byard. He can play the pass, extremely aggressive against the run, big hitter, but also extremely instinctive. So you're talking about one of the better safeties in the league. It's out for the year. So that's a big loss for them. It really is, especially with a lot what they want to do on defense. You know, you go back to what the head coach in his Seattle days, you know, having that safety that can be in the box and deep is very important. But, you know, I think their defensive backs are solid. Their linebackers are a little bit more undersized, run, speed guys, a little bit more like the Colts had. Defensive line can be run against. So that's I would think that's going to be a big part of the Titans' offense.
I've seen plenty of 5-5-2 around the league and here, but they list themselves as a base 5-2-4. How much are they, or what does that create for them in terms of rush, in terms of space in the middle?
You know, I think what they do with that is they can move around a Vic Beasley-type player. They can move him around, and he can be a little bit like what the Titans are doing with Harold Landry at times. You see him stacked behind the defensive line, not just on the edge. You're talking about a similar skill set, some speed to cover the ground if there's a wide run, being athletic enough to drop into pass coverage, but also being a guy that can walk up on the line of scrimmage and give you that fifth rusher on the line of scrimmage. And I think that's what they do with that 5-2 defense, really a 4-3, but kind of a 5-2 look at times. But the Titans have done that at times, more of a 4-3. I just haven't seen that where they walk up Harold Landry on the outside to kind of give him a mismatch, whether it's a non-tight inside, an open side, a weak side. So, you know, you probably will see that in the coming weeks.
Quinn made some substantial changes there, took over the defense, really calling it himself. They were expecting big things right out of the gate. What's been not working?
You know, I think a little bit of it is just the lack of the size and the strength on the front. You know, if you have a smaller linebacker group and you have a smaller defensive line group, you've still got to be stout enough against the run, or teams are going to run against you. And I don't think they've shown that ability consistently, especially when a Grady Jarrett has to get out of the game and get a blow. There's not that backup guy coming in that can really be a rundown player. You know, if you look at the Colts, for example, they bring in some rundown players, whether it's Grover Stewart. They have some guys, even in the past with an Al Woods, guys that can play the run when need be. The Falcons really don't have those extra players, so they're really a move and a speed team. So, but you know they can still be tough on defense. They have corners to cover. But you know it's going to be an interesting day the way that the Titans attack them. I expect them to really run the football.
How much of what Atlanta wants to do is how much does it start with the run and Devontae Freeman?
You know, I think Devontae is that running back that's a dual guy. He can be a pass catcher out of the backfield, get into space and make things happen. He's got such a great energy, you know, not only in the huddle, but on the sidelines and the locker room, but when he plays. And I think the offense feeds off that a little bit. You know, you have one of the best players in the NFL in Julio Jones that can get open versus anyone. And he can get open versus man. He can get open in the zone. He can get on versus a bracket coverage, a double team. You've seen him do it. And so he can win on that outside whenever you need him to. But having that extra running back with that energy and that ability to play in space is very important, not only in the run game, but the pass game. But they have a lot of offensive weapons that they've just, you know, the quarterback's got to be more consistent. And I know that's a, we're talking about a veteran quarterback, but consistency with him is very, very important. The offensive line's been shaky. They've had a lot of injuries too.
When Matt Ryan is on, the accuracy is pinpoint. You know, for Julio Jones makes some great catches, but a lot of times Matt Ryan is fitting the passes in perfectly. From what I've seen.
Yeah, and I mean with Calvin Ridley and Sanu, and they've you know got Austin Hooper as the tight end. They have a number of weapons that can not only stretch the field but be a chain mover as well. They're kind of a multidimensional offense in that way. I think the offensive line's really hampered them, especially with the injuries. They drafted two guys in the top two picks this year, and both of them have had the injuries. Caleb McCray out the right tackle spot. Lindstrom's out, the right guard who they drafted in the first round. So, you know, those are big losses for them. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see what they do. Matt Ryan has had some consistency issues, though, especially with underneath coverage. You know, he's always had that little underneath problem where even going back to his Boston College days where a linebacker could pick a ball or a safety could be underneath and pick a ball. You know, he's just seeing that all the time. You even saw it in the game last week where he threw and underneath pick the ball off. You know, those are things that he has to get out of his head at this point in his career.
With him, though, it's not like you know the type of QB you're getting for that particular game because he can turn it on. He did in the second half. They got into a rhythm in the second half in Indy. In the first half, there was nothing going.
They looked like two different offenses in the game last week, and you saw a total switch, not necessarily what they were doing on offense, just the way he was producing.
What did Indy do anything to affect that in the first half? Because I'm thinking, is there some sort of riddle there to be solved with how they played Ryan in the first half versus the second half, or was it simply Matt Ryan just wasn't as good?
You know, I thought it was more on the quarterback, to be honest with you. To go to your point, I thought the quarterback just wasn't as good in the first half. But when he got locked in, to Jonathan's point, I mean, he can really get into a rhythm. He is a little bit of a rhythm quarterback. When he gets kind of going, you know, he can hit a lot of shots, and that's kind of what he is.
And let's get to Julio Jones. Let's wrap up with him because he's the guy that no matter who's covering, he's making plays. Is he the best receiver in football?
I think he is because he has the entire package. He's big, he's physical, and he's super fast. And the probably his best trait is what people don't know enough about is his competitive nature, and he's very competitive. This is a guy's last year at Alabama that caught very few balls. He was asked to block. This dynamic receiver, and they went on to win a national championship because they didn't have the quarterback to get it to him. He is a team-first guy all the time, highly competitive with the physical attributes that you want as a receiver. But his ability to go win that 50-50 ball, it's not 50-50 when it's in the air. He wins it. And, you know, you have to either come over top of him, you're going to pass interference penalties, you're having to hold him out of his break because he will jet right by you as well. So, you know, he has that hard matchup for a corner. If it's a Malcolm Butler, he's going to be, you know, he's going to be pushing it all day to cover him. And if it's a Dory, I mean, those are tough matchups. I expect them to try to take him away, put somebody on top of him. But then they have other players in Mohamed Sanu and Calvin Ridley that are really good as well.
Blake Bedingfield joins us each Tuesday from 11 until noon. You can read his work at paulkuharsky.com. It had a really good recap of every sack allowed, every pressure allowed from the game against Jacksonville. You can read that, and then there will be a game preview of the Falcons coming up as well. Right, Paul?
Yep, Friday.
Blake, thank you.
Thank you.